Introduce yourself, please.
Jeff King, State Senator from Independence, Kansas.
We have a lot to talk to you about today, sir, but first, we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Joining Jeff and me today is my KCUR colleague, Dan Margulies, who keeps track of health news for Heartland Health Monitor. Good to have you back, Dan.
Always a pleasure to be here, Sam.
Jeff, we have a huge, dare I say, vast amount of stuff to get to as the legislature prepares to come back into special session. But first, my two favorite questions. Tell me about your family and your pets and what your future in politics may hold, my friend.
Well, I have a 9 and 7-year-old who are playing outside right now, so I'll just describe them, and if you hear any little voices in the background, that's what happens.
We love little voices here on the podcast.
They are going into fourth and second grade and keep me hopping more than anyone in the Kansas Senate. I do serve as the vice president of the Kansas Senate, and my plans in politics for the near future are very easy, which is I'm not running for re-election, so the special session, barring another special session after it, will be my last time in the Kansas Senate.
You mean the last time? Are you you taking yourself out of politics forever?
No, I'm 41 years old and know well enough that I have no idea what next week will hold, let alone next month or next year. Having a fourth grader and a second grader, it's a good time to focus on business and family a little more and see what the future holds when the future comes.
All right. We're going to get into school finance. I think that's what everybody wants to talk about. But there's a lot of other big issues that have come across your desk in the last, 90 days or so. And so I want to start with Dan Margulies with some of those.
Well, the first question I wanted to ask you off the bat was, could you tell us why you have chosen not to run for re-election? You, after all, had a very promising career ahead of you. You were appointed to the Senate, as I recall, a couple of years ago when then-Senator Derek Schmidt was appointed Attorney General. So you've only been in the Senate and were re-elected in when, 2012?
2012.
Yes. So why are you choosing right now to not run for re-election?
Well, I've been in the legislature for a decade. I was first elected in 2006 and, had a realization as I was looking in the mirror, thinking about whether to run for re-election again or not. We talked about my family at the start. My daughter, if I ran for and won re-election, would be 14 at the end of my next term. My son would be 12. And I don't know what your families have been like, but having a 14-year-old daughter and going to her and say, hey, I'd like to see you a little more. What do you think of that? Doesn't tend to work too well for daughters in their mid-teenage years. So really wanted to get the chance to spend more time with her, spend more time with my son. Also, I have to say that there's a growing sense of frustration in Topeka. I don't think I'm alone in expressing that frustration, that real problems aren't being solved. We're pushing the problems down the road, we're not addressing them the way we need to address them. And if I had to look at myself honestly and said, where do I think I can be of most good to my neighbors, my friends, and the people of Kansas in the next 4 years, right now that probably isn't the Kansas Senate.
If the situation were otherwise in the legislature, would you have chosen to run for re-election?
It would change the balance some. I mean, the personal and professional outside the legislature concerns would still be there. But Dan, to me, it's a balance. And I've done this before every election. Everyone makes sacrifices running for office. We know that going in. We accept them. I'm not seeking any pity or sympathy for it. But if you don't think the good you can accomplish outweighs the sacrifices that you and your family and friends are making, then honestly, if you went in, you'd just be doing it for ego, and that's the worst possible reason ever to run for office of any sort. And looking at the balance, the financial and personal and family sacrifices, I didn't think I could do enough good in office the next 4 years to outweigh those. So I'll try to find other ways to help and see what the future holds.
Jeff, I'm wondering if one of those frustrations might be the inability for Candace to expand Medicaid. This was a personal issue with you. The hospital in Independence closed down. Is that one of your frustrations?
I don't know that it's the inability to expand Medicaid, which does frustrate me that we couldn't. It's the inability to have a real conversation about whether we expand Medicaid that would be one of the frustrations. I think we see this with a number of issues, be it expanded Medicaid, where we couldn't even get really a dialogue started, the problems with the LLC loophole created in the 2012 tax plan, where we had dozens of people vote against closing that loophole that publicly supported closing it, but said that they wanted an issue to campaign on, so we didn't close it. Those sort of frustrations where the noise, the acrimony, the belligerence of politics have gotten so high that you can't even have a constructive, creative dialogue in the public sphere and in the Kansas legislature about that. So that I hope that was an answer to your question, but yeah, that is a sense of...
Well, let me stick with Medicaid expansion for a second, if I may. Because if I am not mistaken, you were initially opposed to Medicaid expansion. Then you came around to some form of Medicaid expansion. First of all, would you kindly explain why you were initially opposed to expansion and what made you come around?
Well, and Dan, if you remember, initially when the concept of expanded Medicaid was first put forward by Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, states had no flexibility in how they expanded. The option was fairly simply expand traditional Medicaid to a new population or don't. And as we saw other states, Arkansas, and particularly the Indiana model really changed my perspective on Medicaid expansion, states like Kansas were given the option to be creative, use those federal resources in their own way to address a population that needed health care. So, Dan, I honestly don't think my position has changed on Medicaid expansion. I'm still opposed to expanding traditional Medicaid in its traditional form, but we don't have to do that. We can get creative. We can look at the Indiana model, the Arkansas model, and others, and tailor a new program to meet the needs of Kansans who lack health care and rural hospitals who are struggling. And to me, that is too attractive of an option, too necessary of an option to ignore.
And you're talking about expansion via the private sector, correct? That's the Indiana and Arkansas models you're talking about. And if that is the case, why are your colleagues so opposed to it?
I think part of it is the politics of perception and the politics of labels. If you looked at your first question, and I've gotten many like it, it's certainly not unique, of the question will be, why did you change your position on Medicaid expansion? Not how is your approach now different than the one that you opposed a few years ago? And I've had colleagues come up to me and say, you know, you've been consistent on this, but it's hard to get that message out. If we say we're supportive of any form of Medicaid expansion, even a very private sector one, we're going to get labeled as embracers of Obamacare and have all the political damage that comes with that. So there's been a reticence to step out and say, let's get creative, for fear that the dialogue will just be, you're an Obamacare supporter, we're going to oppose you because of that.
Jeff and Dan, I want to move on. Jeff, before we do, though, I just want to be clear that you are a supporter of the 2012 tax cuts, correct?
Yes, I was. That's correct.
But the there's a different reality now. Is that what you're saying about the tax situation in Kansas?
What I'm saying is the 2012 tax plan was never perfect. I think the part of the tax plan that cut the overall rate from 6.45% to 4.6% and got rid of some deductions, credits, and exemptions to pay for that rate cut was sound policy and can work, and that part of the package fully implemented still does work. The problem is we created the largest loophole in Kansas history and I would argue one of the largest loopholes in any state's history, when we fully exempted LLC, Subchapter S, and sole proprietorships from paying any state income tax. That part has clearly failed. It's grown out of control and threatens the health of our budget and our ability for the state to meet its financial obligations. And we need to recognize that, admit a mistake, and fix it.
Which brings me to what's going to happen on the 23rd. So we're going into a special session. And right now, to fix inequity for the that the Kansas Supreme Court has said that the equity portion of school funding in Kansas is unconstitutional. And by my count right now, Jeff, I'm looking at four different plans for lawmakers to grapple with. There's the Democratic plan that came out on last Friday. There's your plan. And then a plan from that we anticipate from moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans. Does that kind of sum it up?
Many more than four that are out there in some form. And, you know, even you mentioned my plan. I'm curious to hear what you think my plan is, because I think there's two parts of this equation, the short-term fix before June 30 and the longer-term fix regarding adequacy in the future school finance litigation, that are sort of two different steps. But needless to say, there are a lot of different approaches to how we could solve this.
Yeah. Well, your plan is to essentially take money that was earmarked for this U.S. 69 highway expansion project around Pittsburgh in southeast Kansas. That's $25 million, and then add some more money to it just to fix inequity. Is that a fair assessment?
It's a fair assessment in that I think we need to find the money in other parts of the budget to combine with that extraordinary needs fund, which is some money we have in the school formula already.
That's about $15 million, correct?
Between $15 and $17
million, right.
Depending on how we count it and what obligations it has. My simple suggestion is we need to look at new expenditures authorized after the court issued its recent school finance ruling and say, if we hadn't made those expenditures before, they need to be prioritized to schools rather than the other purposes we've had for them. The primary one that I've seen with that is the money allocated for a project that was delayed in the Fort Scott, Pittsburgh area on U.S. Highway 69.
Where did they find that money? By the way, I've read a lot of stories about this, talked to a lot of people, and so I'm wondering where they found that $25
million. The press release, or I shouldn't say the press release, the Capital Journal article that I read had stated that the office had said they had some decreased snow removal costs from a milder-than-expected winter and a couple of projects that had come in under bid, which... if that is indeed if it has indeed freed up $25 million, right now we need that $25 million to address the equity ruling more than we need to move a project up a little bit.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on this special session? I mean, the governor suggested that hoped that you could get it done in a day. That's not going to happen, is it?
I see absolutely no way you can do this in a day. If you'll remember, we had a special session in 2013 that was on one finite issue regarding hard 50 sentencing for some of the most heinous murderers in our state. Very large consensus on how to address that, and that took a day and a half. So I don't see how we get this done any quicker than we got that done, and we're probably looking at more like 3 to 5 days if all goes well.
You know, the very first special session in the Kansas legislature was in 1874 for grasshopper relief. Are you sort of wishing you were dealing with grasshoppers instead of school finance?
I, coming from a farming community, I will never underestimate the devastation of grasshoppers, but right now I would take almost anything over dealing with school finance litigation again.
You're a lawyer, Senator King. What do you make of the... efforts to expand the grounds of impeachment of judges in Kansas, and beyond that, the effort to oppose the retention of the Supreme Court judges who are up for re-election?
I think those are two very different issues, and I have two different views on them. The first, I'm wholly against expanding the grounds for impeachment in any form, in any way. Our Constitution sets forth an impeachment process. It has worked well when it has been used. We shouldn't expand on it. We need to keep that where it is and know that our Constitution has also specifically built in a retention election for judges and justices so that if the people of Kansas feel that their Supreme Court justices aren't doing the job they should, they have a voice, they have a tool to vote them out of office. So I think retention elections should be very well contested, vigorously fought out in the public square, because to me that's the mechanism that we have for the people to say whether they want to keep their justices or not.
Do you yourself believe that the judges on the Kansas Supreme Court should be retained?
There are ones that I don't believe should, and there are ones that I think should be retained. To me, this isn't a blanket slate. It is an individual analysis of each judge's opinions, demeanor, and conduct on the bench. And so I would hope voters and people advocating for or against retention will analyze each justice by their own merits.
Well, Jeff, who are you thumbs up on and who are you thumbs down on?
Well, as a member of the bar that practices in front of the Kansas Supreme Court, I will leave my vote to the ballot box between myself and my own ballot. But I do think there are some real issues in looking at opinions, in looking at Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court responses to our Supreme Court cases that give me pause about a couple of our justices. But I'll leave that to others to debate and decide.
Well, let's put your bar card aside for a second. Let's put on your Senate Vice President hat, and I'll ask the political question again. Will you be working to oust four of what are now referred to as a liberal members of the Kansas Supreme Court?
No, I won't be working for that, and I won't be calling anyone a liberal or conservative member of the court. I don't think political characterizations work with courts. I think you have justices who interpret statutes in the Constitution narrowly and limit their decisions as tightly as they can to the issue at hand. Usually that's known as judicial conservatism, even though they may do so in a politically liberal way, and vice versa. So I try not to use those terms at all when describing judges and justices, and no, I won't be working on any of those campaigns.
Do you, and let me just stick with this, with the Constitution for a second. You moved a constitutional amendment through the Judiciary Committee last week that would bar both the courts and the legislature from ever shutting down schools. My question to you is, if you take that away from the courts, what sort of remedy might be able to be crafted if, in fact, there's parts of school finance that are indeed found unconstitutional? What would the remedy, what could that remedy possibly be?
Sure. As you know, Sam, we have had the suitable provision for the finance of public education provision in our state constitution for exactly 50 years. Of those, about 31 to 32 years, we have been in school finance litigation. Mm-hmm. This case in Gannon was the first time in the history of that litigation, to my knowledge, that the Supreme Court has ever threatened to order schools closed. The district court did it in the Montoy case about 10 years ago, 11 years ago. But for the previous about 47 years, the Kansas Supreme Court found other remedies that would work in these cases besides threatening to close schools. And we've seen those. Sometimes, and the Attorney General had recommended it in this case, you can look at striking the offending provision from a school finance bill, either, you know, capital outlay portion of the school finance formula being stricken down as unconstitutional, part of the LOB formula, et cetera, and leave the remainder of the formula. You know, the hardship from striking that formula down puts pressure on the legislature, you know, but still at the same time doesn't close schools for every student in the state of Kansas for an offense in one part of the formula. Other states have used civil contempt fines where they have held the state or state agencies in contempt and levied civil fines for noncompliance with school finance orders. There are a wealth of different remedies depending on the situation that our own court has used in the past rather than threatening to close schools.
Jeff, I want to ask you, just a couple minutes ago, you said that you thought it was going to take at least 3 to 5 days to wrap up this special session. On Thursday, that's the 23rd, when the special session gavels in, are there going to be enough members of the Kansas Senate there, present in Topeka, to do business?
There certainly should be. It's my understanding that there will be. I've been talking to a few members, other members of our Senate leadership team have as well. We anticipate a majority of the senators being there to conduct business. I will be convening the Senate Judiciary Committee. My understanding is the Senate Ways and Means Committee will be meeting Thursday morning as well. And our members say they'll be present and ready to do business.
There won't be, I've been told that Senate President Susan Weigel has been telling some members that they didn't need, of her caucus, that they didn't need to be there till next Monday. Is that true?
I know she's told a number that are not on one of those two committees that we won't be transacting any business on Thursday. And that's just simple logistics. When you do a special session, you have no bills held over from the regular session. So we won't have anything for the full Senate to vote on until Ways and Means or Judiciary Committee have hearings, work a bill, and vote a bill out of committee for the Senate to consider. So logistically, why I disagree with the governor of finishing a session in one day, logistically, we won't have anything for the full Senate to vote on until at least Friday. As far as what she's told people for Friday, I don't know.
Dan Margulies, your final question or thought for Jeff King.
Well, I just wanted to get back to the bill that you introduced, Senator, that we were just now talking about a moment ago. That would bar the Supreme Court from crafting a remedy that would force the schools to shut down. I'm assuming that you agree that the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of what laws are constitutional and what laws are not. And if so, are you not taking out of their hands, notwithstanding that they have other tools in their arsenal, a very important and powerful tool to get the legislature to comply with the Constitution as the Kansas Supreme Court sees fit?
Yes, the Supreme Court is completely the final arbiter of what the Constitution says, but the final, or what the Constitution means. The final arbiter of what the Constitution says are the people in the state of Kansas. And I fully agree that the legislature cannot take away and should not be able to take away that ability for the court to be the final interpreter of the Constitution. But what I think we have to do is when there is a scenario so dire and that either the court or the legislature closing schools to me is just a nuclear option. I mean, telling parents their kids may not have any place to go to school next year, telling teachers they may not have a job next year, telling kids they won't get an education next year. That is such a draconian option that I think the people of Kansas should be able to decide should any branch of government, legislature or courts, be able to actually close schools. And if the people of Kansas say, no, we want that option out there, great. But they've had the chance to make their voice heard. Because I keep hearing from more and more parents and teachers a real fear out there about what's going to happen next year. And I don't think it's right for them to have that fear without the people having a say first.
And Jeff, let me just, I don't want you to get away without me asking about the adequacy issue. This is
sure.
Something that you probably won't have to deal with since you're not coming back. But isn't that going to be don't you think that's going to dominate the next legislative session after the election when they come back in 2017?
Absolutely. No question. I mean, what we are dealing with in this special session is, you know, forgive my pun, child's play next to what next year will be. The adequacy issue is going to fully dominate the 2017 session along with the crafting of a new school finance formula, which is one of the reasons I think giving the people a voice of taking school closure off the table is so important. Because that isn't going to solve the problem we have over the next week, which is why I have my own plan to deal with that. But we are going to be dealing with threatened school closures again next year, almost certainly, if the people of Kansas don't take that off the table.
We're going to have to leave it there. First, my thanks to Dan Margulies from Heartland Health Monitor for joining us today. Dan, always good to have you back.
Thank you.
And Jeff, this is where we turn the podcast over to you, my friend. You pick the walk-off music. So what song is going through your head right now?
Well, I know we've been talking about the legislative and judicial branches a lot, but I think with the Tony Awards that Hamilton received, Cabinet Battle Number 1 from Hamilton would be a great send-off as we go into special session.
I just want to say that I believe that is a genius choice. Senator Jeff King, Senate Vice President from Independence, I know you're taking some time off, joining us from it's maybe a staycation today, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us at kcur.org/statehouseblend. And we're on every Tuesday at 11 a.m. On Up to Date with Steve Kraske. Are you a fan of the Twitter? I'll bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. And my co-host, Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the Michigas over there in Missouri, you can follow him. He's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We fought for these ideals, we shouldn't settle for less. These are wise words, enterprising men quote them. Don't act surprised, you guys, cause I wrote them. Ow, but Hamilton forgets. His plan would have the government assume state sense. Now place your bets as to who that man.